What's happening, everyone? You're listening to the Wildcast podcast, or watching if you're watching on Tucson.com. We always appreciate our video viewers. And if you're listening to us, you're probably listening to us on Apple and Spotify. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and comment the Wildcast podcast on those platforms. We're going to be talking a lot of Arizona football. It is a very busy offseason for U of A and Brett Brennan. We're going to get into some of the additions that Arizona has made in the transfer portal. Also, they're adding some guys at the junior college level as well. They added some guys to their 2025 recruiting class, and it's looking like Arizona is going to, I put the over under at 60.5 newcomer scholarship newcomers for Arizona. We'll see if Arizona gets that over. I think they will. There's going to be a lot of new faces on this upcoming Arizona football team, so it should be interesting. But I will also get into some of your mailbag questions too. We appreciate those who submitted those questions. So, Lev, I mean, you wrote about it recently for Tucson.com and the Arizona Daily Star about how Arizona has kind of won the offseason. And I can't believe it, but we are recording this on January 16th, which is the one-year anniversary of Brent Brennan being hired by the Wildcats, replacing Jed Fish. The last year has felt like a decade, like so much has happened in the last year. But, man, when Brent Brennan took over, he inherited a pretty good roster, but it was a roster that dealt with a lot of injuries and didn't really have the depth. And I also think the offensive hires were kind of a mistake with Dino Babers as the offensive coordinator, and you know Matt Atkins also struggled too. So there were all sorts of issues that just kind of piled up for Brent Brennan in year one. And it led to the Wildcats going from the highest preseason AP ranking since 1999 to a disastrous 4-8 season. But since the season ended, Lev, Arizona has kind of piled up some small victories, which he wrote about.
Yes, indeed. They had to do this. Brent Brennan had no choice. I think I kind of alluded to that too around the time that Desiree Reed Francois announced that he would be coming back, like that month of December, you know, maybe a couple weeks into January, really critical for him to kind of get this thing headed in the right direction. Yeah. And I think he's done that to a degree. To, you know, there's certain things that we feel certain about, and there's certain things that we're still unsure about. I feel really good about Seth Dagey as offensive coordinator. Really exuded confidence when he met with the media. He's a young, up-and-coming son of a coach, former quarterback, you know, like football in his blood growing up in Texas.
And not just with Texas, West Texas.
West Texas, yeah. Someone who, you know, has spent time around Mike Leach. So he has that air raid background, but showed in his year last year at Marshall that he's got some flexibility and ingenuity to him, because they really ran the ball more than they passed it out of an air raid system. So, you know, you like to see a coach who's capable of some critical thinking and not just kind of doing a paint by numbers sort of thing. So, and that went over very well, I feel like, among the UA fan base. So that was a win right there. You feel really good about Joe Salavea being brought in. That one came kind of out of nowhere. It all came together, at least as far as like us learning about it very quickly on that day. And I think that it was a brilliant move. Like, whatever reason Miami wanted to maybe part ways with him, who cares? Like, this is a big win for Arizona, because you've upgraded at that position of defensive line coach. I don't think that unit was very well coached last year. Trey Smith had a lot of quarterback pressures, and he also had like a lot of moments where running backs were running past him to the outside. You know, like, you should be able to do both if you're as gifted a player as Trey Smith is. And I think Joe Salavea is someone who can get the best out of him, Chase Kennedy, and other guys that they have along the defensive line. Joe brings a certain cachet to this position, right? Like, he is a Wildcat himself, a famous one, someone that fans have wanted here for a long time. you know, and he's coming in as a associate head coach and defensive line coach. And there are a lot of people who wanted him to be the head coach.
Yeah.
When the job was open, or maybe the defensive coordinator. So getting him to come back here as a great move. He is a renowned recruiter too. Like,
yep.
The Polynesian pipeline is going to be flowing, and he is a big time guy in the areas where Arizona needs to recruit. You know, we're talking about Hawaii, the islands, California, you know, the western part of the United States, Utah. There's a big Polynesian presence there as well. I think Joe's going to be big time in recruiting those spots. So that was definitely a big win. And then I think the other, you know, wins were getting certain guys to come back to school, important players, namely Noah Fifita. You know, so you have an established number one quarterback and a great locker room leader. Didn't have the best season last year, but I think that was more the circumstances than anything else. I think there's really an opportunity for him to thrive in this new system. And then those three defensive backs, Genesis Smith, Dalton Johnson, and Traydon Stukes. Those are big time. Those are really good players, locker room leaders. You know, you lost a few guys on the defensive side of the ball, but I think retaining those three was a really big deal. So yeah, good start to the long and arduous offseason for Brent Brennan and his staff. The changes that they made among the coaches, and then of the work that they've done on the personnel side.
Well, I think also that the two are very much connected, because when Arizona hired Seth Dagey to be its next offensive coordinator, what do we find out? Seth Dagey actually recruited Noah Fifita to USC. They were interested. They had a connection going back to his high school days at Servite High School. So they've had a relationship for a long time. And Brent Brennan even talked about, you know, when Arizona's going out to hire a new offensive coordinator, Noah Fifita is very much a very important part to this decision. And so Seth Dagey being familiar with Noah and having a relationship, and also being a former quarterback himself who played at Texas Tech and was great under Mike Leach, who went on to, you know, have a cup of coffee professionally and then turned to coaching and is now a young coach that's not far removed from the game. So Seth Dagey can relate to Noah Fifita more than Dino Babers and Matt Atkins. And I know Matt Atkins, he also played, but Matt Atkins, with all due respect, played quarterback at, I think it was Southern Oregon or something like that. It's not Texas Tech. It's not at the same level as a guy like Seth Dagey. So I just think it's a better match for Noah Fifita. Your offensive play caller is a quarterback himself and a guy who's played at the highest level. So I think that had a lot to do with getting Noah Fifita to come back. And, you know, Brent Brennan talked about it in the introductory press conference with Danny Gonzalez as the defensive coordinator and Joe Salavea now at defensive line. It was just really all about getting guys in the right seats. Like, I think Danny Gonzalez, not so good as a special teams coordinator. like let's look at all the blunders that happened this last season and all the issues that happened with special teams. A lot of that has to do with Danny Gonzalez. But if we're talking about Danny G as a defensive coordinator, was great under Rocky Long at San Diego State. And then when he was Herm Edwards' defensive play caller at ASU, Sun Devils had like a top 20, top 30 unit kind of across the board. So I think Danny Gonzalez is a really good defensive coach. And I think having him just kind of focus on linebackers and the defense as a whole, and then putting Dwayne Aquina on the back end where he's a renowned defensive coach, kind of like a DB godfather or DB guru. Genesis Smith, who's going to be draft eligible next season. All these guys like Dalton Johnson and Traydon Stukes, they're going into their last year at U of A. Why not be coached up by a guy like Dwayne Aquina and really get that one last year of him before you guys turn pro? And I'm sure, you know, those guys had some pretty hefty financial offers, especially a guy like Genesis Smith. Like, who wouldn't want to have a guy like Genesis Smith in your defensive secondary? But I think it matters to them being coached by Dwayne Aquina. And so when you put it all together, I think Arizona has probably the best coaching staff it could possibly have going into 2025. And there's optimism with Arizona. Now, we got to kind of obviously keep our expectations tame because we just saw this team go 4-8. But I do think the program is trending in the right direction. And it's going to be a very important year, Lev, because, you know, this could be a year that determines whether or not Brent Brennan's back on that sideline in 2026.
100%. Speaking to the relationship idea, obviously NIL is huge these days, bigger than ever this particular cycle because of some factors that are sort of hard to explain and understand about with revenue sharing coming in and these collectives kind of wanting to spend their money before the paradigm shifts a little bit as far as how the players are compensated. But it's still, and you hear coaches talk about this all the time, it is really still more than anything a relationship business. And as you mentioned, there was a prior relationship between Seth Dagey and Noah Fifita from when Seth was a lower level assistant at USC trying to get Noah Fifita to come there. So they had a foundation, you know, before they ever had a conversation about what they could get done at Arizona. The three defensive backs obviously had something going with Dwayne Aquina. Danny Gonzalez mentioned that the other day when we talked to him and Joe Salavea, that, you know, they've already worked with Dwayne for 2 years, right? I mean, that's significant. And now he's going to be focused, you know, solely on the secondary, which is his area of strength, where he's got a tremendous background, you know, one of the all-time great defensive back coaches. So that's going to benefit the group as a whole. You know, Danny has a little bit to prove, I think, as a coach here. Linebackers, you know, Jacob Manu was not playing up to the same standard before he got injured last year. I thought Tay Brown had some good moments, but there were other games where he kind of disappeared a little bit.
Yeah.
Special teams, like some of the rankings were pretty good and like the actual kicking was good, but there were a lot of breakdowns at key moments, like that, you know, that Kansas State game flipped, you know, when they allowed a punt return, they were kind of had a rotation of punters at that point in the season. Tyler Loop was the punter.
Yeah.
And in that game, which he hadn't been at any previous point, it was kind of a low kick that bounced. And, you know, you don't want to put all the blame on him because guys were not in the proper lanes and so forth on that play. But, you know, a little bit for Danny to prove, I think, to people here. He does have a good track record. That San Diego State defense in 2017 was 11th nationally. His ASU defenses were pretty good in 2018 and 19. And, of course, you know, personnel is as big or as even a bigger factor than the coaching when it comes to college football. There's always the X's and O's versus Jimmy's and Joe's type of argument. You have to have the players.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that is, you know, to quote a movie that you saw recently, Justin, A Complete Unknown. As far as like whether these portal pickups are going to pan out. Like there's a lot of guys who are coming up from like the FCS level or they're coming up from the group of five and that can work. There are a lot of success stories, but we don't know how it's going to translate.
Yeah.
Look, they did a lot of legwork on these dudes. Like, you know, that before, well, even before the season was ending, they're, you know, poking around, talking to the people they know, doing work, doing film work. They had a whole week, you know, before the portal officially opened to do nothing but that because they didn't have a game to prepare for. They didn't qualify for the postseason. So they've done their homework.
Yeah.
They've brought in a bunch of guys. They've, you know, it's almost a one for one as far as losses and additions, but we don't know. And we won't know. We'll get maybe a glimpse of it in spring. And we'll learn more as time goes on when we watch these guys practice, you know, with a, you know, a Power Four program, but we'll see. I don't know. I'm going to kind of just retain a healthy, dose of skepticism for the time being.
And a big chunk of those newcomers are on both lines. I think Arizona's defensive line, if I'm not mistaken, is now up to 10. scholarship newcomers between 2025 and the portal.
Who is the 10th one, Justin?
Who
is the 10th defensive lineman who just signed up?
Oh, it's not Leroy Paulo, is it?
No, Tia Savea.
Oh my gosh. Why did he blink? Oh my gosh. Tia Savea. Hilarious.
Hilarious. And why is that? Why is it hilarious?
Because the portal, man, it's just amazing how it can kind of steer a kid in his journey as a college football player. This guy was recruited. The Tia Savea story is so funny. So he was recruited by Johnny Nansen to UCLA. Johnny Nansen was a defensive line coach for the Bruins.
Yep.
Nansen then becomes the defensive coordinator at Arizona. Tia Savea follows him. Tia Savea plays two seasons at Arizona. Johnny Nansen goes to Texas. Tia Savea is like, I'm going to go to Texas. Only played in four games, had a couple of tackles, but redshirted this year and has 1 year of eligibility. He's like, you know what I'm going to do with that year? I'm going to go back to Arizona and I'm going to play for Joe freaking Salavea, which is so awesome. So I'm like, yeah, choosing the photos for Tia Savea was pretty easy because he's already in a Wildcats uniform.
Yeah, from UCLA, so
ones we have.
UCLA, Arizona, Texas, and back to Arizona. And since his first year, if I'm doing the math here correctly, was 2020, that one doesn't count. So he's another one of these sixth-year guys who still has retained a year of eligibility. Yeah. Hey, a good get, right? Like kind of a known entity and a big body. Someone like, you know, they didn't have many 300-pounders last year. And it showed. Their run defense was not really as good. I am interested to see how Danny Gonzalez and Joe Salavea want to coach the defensive linemen. There was the big emphasis last year under the previous defensive line coach, Joe Seumalo, of just, hey, get upfield, get vertical. And it sometimes left holes, right? Like you get tackles for loss sometimes, but it would leave gaps to the outside. It would leave the linebackers exposed. Whereas Johnny Nansen's scheme was much more, we're going to occupy blockers and free up the linebackers to make plays. So dancing I don't know bears. How Danny, yeah, I don't know how Danny and Joe are going to want to do it, but I know which of those two work better.
Yeah.
You know, and that was having those big guys kind of, you know, serve as the blockers in a sense for the linebackers.
Exactly.
To make plays. Obviously, you still want your defensive linemen to make plays, but as far as like the inside guys, like you want to take up space, you know, you want to clog things up and let your, you know, let your defensive playmakers make plays. Hopefully they'll be able to kind of get back to that a little bit.
Got to be the dancing bears. Got to return to that form. And I think Joe Salavea is a great coach because he gets it. He gets the Arizona culture, understands it. And I agree with you. I mean, renowned recruiter is going to bring in a ton of Polynesian players. This was also a guy that recruited Kayvon Thibodeau to Oregon. I know it's easy to recruit five-star players to Oregon, but he brought him in here brought him into Oregon, coached him up, turned him into a top three pick in the draft. And, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau may have already been that guy without Joe Salavea, but it takes some really good coaching at that level to prepare a guy to become a number three overall pick, because we've seen all sorts of five-star players not turn into anything. I mean, I remember when Justin Flo was coming out of high school, people were talking about him maybe being the number one overall pick in the draft when he's eligible. And now Justin Flo is a backup linebacker at Arizona. And with all due respect to Flo, because I think he's talented. I think he's got explosiveness and athleticism, but it still requires coaching to turn those high level recruits into elite NFL prospects.
So I was looking through his, you know, the recruits that he's credited with in 247's database. And obviously Kayvon Thibodeau is one of those. And Penei Sewell is another one, an offensive lineman, one of the best offensive linemen in the NFL, still playing for the Detroit Lions. I don't think Arizona is going to get a lot of Kayvon Thibodeau, Penei Sewell types. What they need to get are the Frankie Louvu, Hercules Mata'afa types.
Hercules? Right?
Frankie Louvu is a player that Joe Salavea is credited to recruiting to Washington State, and he's still playing, and he's really good. He's with the Washington Commanders this year, who are going to face the Lions in that playoff game. I believe, if I'm looking at this correctly, that he was a second team All Pro this year.
How about that?
And I believe also that he was an undrafted player, but obviously a really good player who's made a great career for himself with the Jets, Panthers, and now the Commanders. So those are the types of guys that Joe needs to find and bring to Arizona. Those, you know, those three-star players who are maybe he can turn into like four-star, like get four-star production out of them and send some of those guys to the NFL. And I have a lot of confidence that he's going to be able to do that.
On the other line, 11 newcomers. Last time I checked on the offensive line. So when you
that includes the recruiting class, right?
That's recruiting class because they signed five there. They also added a bunch of guys in the transfer portal. So Arizona understands the needs for this upcoming season. They need depth because, especially on the offensive line, because there were too many inexperienced players playing. And I know that Arizona's, they're adding some inexperienced guys in the freshman class, but some of these guys look like they could play now. Like Sione Tohe, the guy from Modern Day, Josh Oglesby called him a certified people mover. Like he is a guy who just moves people. So the Wildcats have pieces. I mean, they only have two returners on the O-line as like starters. And that is Rhino and Alexander Deust. And everybody else outside of that, it's all going to be new guys. So offensive line, defensive line.
I mean, I would say like the biggest loss to me that they suffered in the transfer portal was Wendell Moy Jr., who ended up at Tennessee. But that is one that you can understand why he decided to go into the portal and try to get as much money as he could. You know, his father died a few years ago. I think his mother's also been ill.
Cancer.
Yeah. So this is someone who might be an NFL player, might not. You never know. You know, like take advantage of the opportunity that's presented to you by going to an SEC school and you know, getting a six-figure quote unquote salary for this upcoming season. Big loss. It's someone that they thought about could maybe move to center, which is a position that is really kind of an unknown heading into spring ball. They do bring back Grayson Stovall. That's someone that they could look at there. One of the portal additions, Isaac Perez from Portland State, played center last year. So that's someone that they can look at. But again, like you're talking about going from Portland State to Arizona, like that is a big jump. And who knows if he'll be ready for that. But that position was a huge problem for them last year. I mean, really caused a lot of issues. There were a bunch of short yardage situations that they couldn't convert, a lot of quarterback pressure on Noah Fifita, and kind of got in his head, I feel like, as the season went on, and it caused him to kind of have a breakdown in fundamentals. They'll also be, you know, every offensive lineman and the you know, returning offensive line coach, Josh Oglesby, will be learning a new system this year that hopefully will be simpler than what they did last year. It seemed like there was a lot of complicated, you know, pulling that required precise timing. And if it didn't work, like it did not look good. The offense lacked a certain rhythm, never really established that, you know, that kind of like, hey, let's get the ball out of our hands. Let's keep things moving type of tempo and flow. Hopefully they'll be able to establish that over the course of the offseason with everybody kind of learning this together.
And going back to Wendell, I'm glad you brought that up. And not only are these kids getting like lucrative NIL deals and then rev share too, but for some of these kids, it's the first time they're being recruited and they kind of want to experience that a little bit. You know, I can, you know, say for a fact that, you know, that was a big part of Traydon Stukes' decision to go into the portal, you know, because when Stukes was coming out of high school, he just joined Arizona as a walk-on. He wasn't heavily recruited, didn't really have, you know, much opportunities coming out of high school. And then he signed with Arizona as a walk-on, became this great defensive back. And then in this era of rev share and NIL, and Stukes, you know, was talked about by Dwayne Aquina as, you know, one of the best kept secrets in college football and is this great defensive back. And you could see the production over the last few years. So if you're trading Stukes, why wouldn't you want to test the market, see what your value is? And you know what? Go on some recruiting visits. Experience that for the first time ever. Wendell was also another guy who was kind of in that category, you know, was going to go to Morgan State and then joined Arizona as a walk-on before earning a scholarship. So there's just a lot of, each kid has its own circumstance, but I think it all worked out for everybody. So
yeah, and there were certain guys that you just kind of felt like were going to leave this year, no matter what. Takaro Davis, you know, he was in the portal for a long time last spring, and you know, talk about someone who has a lot to prove. Like Takaro did not have a great season. He had a great game against Utah, but he did not have a great season. He's now at Washington, where he's reunited with Jed Fish and Ephesians Prysock. Ty Ty Yungalele also went up to Washington. Jacob Manu ended up at Washington. A lot of those guys from the class of 2022.
Yeah.
Right? The vaunted class that produced two guys who are headed to the NFL in Tetsuro McMillan and Jonas Saba-Anaya. I just saw a mock draft Dane Brugler did on The Athletic that had, I think it was, T-Mac was the fourth pick in the first round, and Jonah was the fourth pick in the second round, if I'm recalling this correctly. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you're talking big time guys. That was a big time class. A lot of them are gone now as things go in college football. It's just kind of the way things are. You know, nothing is forever. And if someone stays with your program for 4 or 5 years, it feels like an upset these days. But hey, they have a few of those guys, like we mentioned, and Noah Fifita, Dalton Johnson, Traden Stukes, Genesis Smith, at least, you know, coming back for a third year. That's the nucleus around which you can build this team.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
All right, Lev. Before we answer some mailbag questions, real quick, you know, we look at the transfer portal class.
Yeah.
Lots of prospects. I mean, mm-hmm. Arizona is at close to 30. I think they're at 26 in our transfer portal tracker on Tucson.com. So the Wildcats are adding a lot of new players, and they're not done yet. You know, they're still going to have the spring transfer portal window, but you know, it can also balance it out as well, because I would expect some transfers, they come in and they're like, okay, I'm not getting any playing time here. I'm fourth string. We have some other guys that are coming in too. Like, I got to get out of here. So I would expect some transfers and newcomers to maybe leave after the spring, but I also expect Arizona to add quite a bit of players in the spring window as well. But looking at the players they have now, who are some guys that you think will be bona fide starters and contributors for Arizona? I think for me personally,
give me a name. Yeah, give me a name.
Tristan Bounds, the transfer from Michigan.
Okay.
I think he is probably going to be Arizona's starting right tackle, if I'm willing to make a bet on that. I think Ty Buchanan from Texas Tech is also a guy that could probably be one of Arizona's starting tackles. We don't know what the status is of Rhino Tapatotai. I would imagine he's out for the spring and is going to probably work his way back slowly but surely in training camp. But you have Ty Buchanan and Tristan Bounds at your two tackles. Rhino working his way back. Maybe he gets, you know, one of the tackle spots when he returns. But I like what they did on the offensive line. I also like what they did at running back too. That addition of Ismail Mahdi, that guy's going to be special. And I think, you know, he's going to have kind of the impact that we thought Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt was going to have this past season at Arizona. I don't think Ismail Mahdi is going to have eligibility concerns this year. So I think the Texas State product will come in. Not only is he a really good running back, but he's also a good special teams guy too. So he can return kicks, can return punts. I really like him a lot. There's There's some other interesting players there. I'm curious to see how the defensive backs work. You know, who's going to start at those two corner spots? Because, you know, you have Treydon Stoops coming back. I would imagine he's going to be one of the nickelbacks, even though he's got experience playing corner. I really like the idea of Treydon Stoops at nickelback, Genesis Smith at free safety, playing that center fielder position, and then you have Dalton Johnson there as well. You know, how are the cornerbacks going to fit with Michael Dansby from San Jose State, Javion Cole from Texas? You also have, oh my goodness, Elijah Brown, the transfer from El Camino College, who's coming in. Aiden Garnes from West Virginia. How does he fit into the mix? So cornerbacks, those are the positions I'm going to be looking at in spring and see how those guys settle in. But I think the offensive linemen and also the defensive line too, the most recent guy they got, or not most recent, Tia Savea is going to be impactful, but the defensive end they got from Alcorn State, Malachi Bailey, this guy was a stud playing for the HBCU program down there for the last couple of years. One of the top FCS defensive linemen. I mean, this guy is either a potential starter or a guy that's going to come in and be one of Arizona's key rotational figures. So there's a handful of prospects that I'm interested in watching.
Yeah, they haven't announced him yet officially, so there's always a little bit of worry.
Oh,
when that happens, because you know they can sort of still be poached at the last minute, especially if it's someone that you've kind of unearthed. Now everyone else is like, oh wow, look at this guy. But he had 52 quarterback pressures last year at Alcorn State, which is a lot. That would have led the Big 12, obviously different level of competition. If you haven't seen it yet, I did a story last week where I
cat stats
where I kind of came up with one or two like analytical statistical nuggets on 22 of the guys that they had at that particular time. And it's pretty interesting to look at what guys have done well and what they could, you know, conceivably could still do well. I have a hunch. This is a weird one. I have a hunch that Cameron Barmore is going to be a thing.
The tight end.
The guy from Mercyhurst, who is kind of like a big wide receiver for them. But I looked it up and he actually run blocked a lot for them and had a good run block grade of 74.5 on a scale of, you know, 1 to 100, which is promising. And he just looks like someone who they might be able to, you know, like with his size, create some mismatches, especially in the red zone. They don't have Tetro McMillan anymore to do that sort of thing. Javion Cole is another one who I think is going to be pretty prominent. I would be surprised if he isn't a starter at corner. He was a very good player at San Jose State. Just didn't play that much at Texas. You know, like Texas brought him in to be a depth piece. And you know, we talk about this sometimes, but like he might not have been Texas good, but he's probably Arizona good.
It's like Tia Savea.
So I think that's another one to keep an eye on. Kaena DeCambra, guard from Hawaii, who was a pretty good player there. That's someone I think is probably going to end up starting at guard. I could see, you know, Bounds and Buchanan at tackle, Deuced and DeCambra as the starting guards, and then center, like, you know, big question mark on that one. And then another name that we haven't mentioned is, of course, Luke Weisong, who we saw play here at Arizona in the season opener, and he killed the Wildcats secondary. They obviously liked what they saw when he went in the portal. I think he was the first guy that they added. And someone who's got a lot of experience playing in the slot. You know, the slot receiver position is going to be a prominent one in this Seth Dagey version of the air raid offense. Chris Hudson's another guy who has a lot of experience playing in the slot. Javen Watley is a pure slot receiver, a smaller guy. We know for a fact that Brent Brennan wanted to add more speed to the receiving core. Didn't feel like there were enough guys beyond, you know, Tetero McMillan and Chris Hunter over the second half of the season who could gain separation. That is the position that is near and dear to Brent Brand's heart. That's what he played. That's the position he coaches the most. And you know, they feel like they've upgraded their speed in that room. A couple of the recruits that they brought in too, really fast guys. So we'll see. We'll see how that translates. You know,
we don't apparently, get too- apparently Isaiah Mizell is already clocking in at 22 miles an hour. I forgot what media outlet reported it, but he's like the fastest receiver trapped in high school football right now.
Yeah. So, you know, someone who can maybe take the top off the defense a little bit or gain separation on crossing routes. We don't get too deep into the weeds here on like route concepts and that sort of thing. But it was pretty obvious to everyone last year that they had a lot of slow developing plays and there wasn't a lot of action going on in the middle of the field, the intermediate stuff. And they need guys who can get open and get open quickly so that Noah Fifita can get the ball out of his hands. So I think that wide receiver group that they brought in, those are some guys to keep an eye on.
Kind of transfer portal related, now going into our Twitter mailbag that we put out.
Yeah.
You
put out, Justin.
Well,
credit. I had nothing to do with it.
Well, Nate Fader and M Paz Zona, they kind of have, you know, similar questions. Nate asks, are there still some roster holes that Arizona can fill with the transfer portal? Do you expect any players from Miami to transfer to U of A? It's a good question. And then MPOS says, can you do a position by position review of what's still needed for portal acquisition for Arizona football?
All right. Well, I don't know if we're going to do all the positions, but I will say,
we kind of went
through. I think center is one position where they might still be looking to add someone. Very important spot. It's a unique skill. You have to be smart. They lost a really good one in Josh Baker, who was a very reliable presence for them in the middle of that defense. That one game that he missed, they really missed him that day. So I think that's one area. And then cornerback is another spot where, I mean, they've added a bunch of defensive backs. A lot of them are safety types or maybe someone you look to play nickel, the inside. I think that's a position where they might look to add somebody. Linebacker, maybe still. I mean, they've added some dudes. I don't know what, you know, we talked a little bit with Danny Gonzalez after his press conference the other day about like 3 down linemen, 4 down linemen. What does that really mean? You know, when they refer to 4 down, it doesn't necessarily mean they have a hand in the ground. It just means up at the line.
Yeah.
So when Chase Kennedy is kind of roaming around as a pass rusher, I think that's considered like a 4th defensive lineman more so than a 3rd linebacker.
Yeah.
But if they are going to play like a 3-3-5 type of scheme at times, I don't know if they have enough good linebackers to do that yet. So that remains to be seen. Those are the positions that spring to mind for me, more so than most, center, corner, and linebacker.
Yeah, and you obviously need to keep your options open. Like, I know Blake Gotcher is a really good linebacker, had 162 tackles at Northwestern State, but if there's a guy that you think is as good or maybe better than Blake Gotcher, of course you'd want to bring him on. I do agree with cornerback because when I look at a guy like Aiden Garnes, he looks more like a guy that can maybe play in the dollar package or, you know, play kind of the backup to Trayden Stukes. I think Michael Dansby and Javion Cole are more cornerbacks, and I would expect those guys to likely start. I agree with you on Javion Cole. The coaches love Javion Cole. I probably bank on him starting as well. Do we look at special teams? Do we look at kicker or anything like that? Because I know replacing Tyler Loop, that's tough, but looking at the options they have now, Michael Salgado Medina, he was recruited as a kicker. Do they, you know, look at him? And I also, I think there's something about the process of really building up your resume over a couple of years. Because, like, I don't have high expectations for Michael Salgado Medina if he takes over at kicker. But Tyler Loop was kind of mild when he was the starter at first. And then he worked his way up to like bona fide NFL kicker. So I'm willing to give Michael Salgado Medina some grace in his first year and we'll see how it goes. But living up to Tyler Loop's expectations, that's pretty tough.
Yeah, I think Michael Salgado Medina is going to get the first crack at being Tyler Loop's successor at kicker. Long snapper is I don't think they brought in a long snapper, and they do need one, I think. And then punter, I think they're going to want to bring in somebody else to compete at that spot. We've talked
about maybe they haven't done that yet because they don't have a special teams coordinator.
That could be. Yeah, that could be. That's the last piece of the coaching staff puzzle that has yet to be solved at this point, or announced at least as we're recording this on Thursday, midday. And those guys usually have a lot of connections, right, in the little world of special teams. So that's a very good point. Probably once they bring in the special teams coordinator, I think you could expect to see some additions at those positions of long snapper and punter. You just want to have, with kicker and punter, like at least two of each, you know, on your roster. Not necessarily scholarship players, but, you know, you don't want to overuse those guys. You want to, you know, be able to have some competition as well. You never know when someone gets injured. So yeah, those are some areas that are important, right? Like, you know, like you're hopefully going to be in a lot of close games in the Big 12. And sometimes the difference between winning and losing those is, you know, whether you make a field goal or Absolutely. Whether you have able to pin the other team at the 5-yard line on a punt.
Tim Taylor, and I love his Twitter handle, by the way. His Twitter handle is @toolman51. I love leaning into the Home Improvement name. Home Improvement, one of my all-time favorite shows. I love it. Tim Taylor, he's clamoring for a baseball preview, Lev. What are we going to start talking baseball?
I appreciate that. It's coming. I've just started to line up some interviews. We're going to have a special section on baseball and softball to preview this upcoming season. I'm very bullish on the 2025 Wildcats. I think this is a Omaha type team that they have. Pitching still a bit of an unknown, but I think the lineup's going to be really good and better than it's been. And if you put your faith in Kevin Vance and John DeRuin, that the pitching coach gurus that they have, that they can kind of do what they did last year.
Yeah.
Again, with some maybe even more talent on the mound. I think it's going to come together nicely. And they've got a crazy schedule to start the season. They play in two tournaments in Texas. One of them is in Arlington and one of them is in Houston. And they play four of the six teams they face are in the preseason top 25, including number one, Texas A&M, number four, Tennessee. So we'll find out what these Wildcats have got right off the bat. But I appreciate that from Tim. And don't you worry, my friend. It's coming. Plenty of baseball coverage coming your way.
It's on the way. On the way. All right. Frankie Merrick asks, with all the coaching and player movement, do you guys believe this team is deeper than what we've had in some time? Across the board, I feel we improved. The team at the top may not be as sexy as, let's say, the 2024 Wildcats, right? You don't have a Tetaro McMillan, a certified top 10 pick. You don't have Jonas Avinea, who is one of the best offensive linemen in the entire country. So I think at the top, it's not as attractive as, let's say, this past season. But what got Arizona into some trouble this past season was the players 21 through 85. And I feel like in that area, that's where Arizona has really improved.
Hopefully you're right.
Maybe. Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, they really needed to upgrade in those areas. And let's remember, we've talked about this before, but it's worth bringing up again. Like, when this coaching staff arrived last year, and you can kind of go through the timeline via the timeline that my friend Justin published yesterday of what the last year has been like for Arizona football. Those guys came in mid-January. And when you compare like the players who are available to them in the portal at that point versus what, you know, what they could look at this year, starting when it opened in early December, like there's just more to choose from, right? Yeah. So they should be able to fare better as far as filling some of those depth type of positions. I got to say, Justin, like as busy as it's been over the last 6 weeks, that period in January last year was completely insane. And I was reminded of it looking through your timeline that it was like 2 days after Jed Fish left, Brent Brennan was hired. 2 days. I mean, those coaching searches used to last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And now there are a certain segment of the fan base that was like, they rushed. They shouldn't have done that. But they kind of had to do it, right? Yeah. Or else you risk like losing the whole team, which easily could have happened because that 30-day window opens every time, you know, your head coach departs. So they could have risked losing everybody, and which would have, you know, that would have completely changed the dynamic heading into the 24 season. There would have been a lot less pressure on Brent Brennan, but people would have been really unhappy if, you know, Tetsuro McMillan was going into this NFL draft representing a school other than Arizona. You know, it is really meaningful, I think, to the school and the community program when his name is called, that Roger Goodell says, you know, Tetsuro McMillan, wide receiver, Arizona. And you see that block A pop up on the screen on ESPN. That is a really, really big deal.
Yeah. That, by the way, that timeline, I'm glad you bring it up. That month of January last year felt like a decade, just the month by itself. But between Jed Fish being linked to the Washington job and other gigs to when he was officially hired to when they hired Brennan, and then a week later firing Dave Hickey as athletic director, I'm like, holy cow.
Whoa.
What is going on right now?
So, yeah, Brent Brennan, the athletic director who hired him was let go a week later. President, there's been a change at that position as well. So there's been a ton of turnover at this program. And I think one of the selling points to me with Brent in this role was that he could bring some stability, right? Like he wants to be here. Like I think ideal world, he retires as head coach of the Arizona Wildcats like 20 years from now. You know, like he doesn't want to go anywhere. But he has to, you know, he has to get it done. He has to produce the results to keep that job. And, you know, in an ideal world, you do have some continuity and stability within your coaching staff, and you're not constantly turning things over. I think you look at the best programs, they have that.
Yep.
Right. But it's hard. It's hard to attain that. It's hard to do it at a place like Arizona, especially, which, you know, has been more of a basketball school over the last 30, 40 years than it has been a football school.
All right. Two more quick ones, and then we're going to wrap it up here. And we'll get into our Big 12 Bonanza picks to look at our
record. Final standings.
All right. But this one comes in from Logan Davis. With the trend of other college programs and the changing landscape with NIL and potential direct school player payments / salary caps, is the U of A exploring hiring general managers for UA football and men's basketball? They already do, Logan. For football, it's a guy by the name of Geis Cacroli. He is in charge of the roster and the players, and a very impressive person. I've had many conversations with Geiska over the last several months. Lev, you did a great feature story on him and his background and his upbringing. He is one of the most important people in Arizona football right now. So Geiska Crowley is that guy. And then for basketball, they have a guy by the name of Matt King, who was hired in the last year. I think he was a driving force for having the two red blue games, one in Tucson, one in Phoenix. Obviously the one in Phoenix did not work out, but you know, he's a guy that thinks outside of the box, that is very experienced at what he does. And I think he is a great hire for Arizona. So yeah, they already got the general manager aspect down, which is very interesting to talk about with college sports, having general managers and guys who are in charge of kind of the money of the program and where it's going with the players and just the roster overall.
Yeah, I will take it a step further than that. They have hired somebody by the name of Bud Sasser.
Yeah.
And his title is Associate Athletic Director Contracts. So he's like the cap guy. And players are going to be paid. It's not not potentially going to happen. It is going to happen whenever they, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's on the house settlement. They will be receiving revenue sharing money directly from the school. And that is a fundamental change in the way college sports operates. I did write, as you mentioned, this piece about Gajska back in August. He's a very interesting person. I highly encourage, if you're a subscriber to The Star, to find that piece and check it out, like where he was born, what his name means, what his parents used to do. There's a lot of interesting stuff there that not the typical path for someone who's, you know, in the football personnel business.
And then lastly for us, this one comes in from Patrick Hoyak. And Patrick asks, does Arizona football and men's basketball have a chance of going to the Final Four and or national championship? Well, national championship for football, not far off with the expanded college football playoff. Heck, we were talking about going into this last season. It's conceivable Arizona could get into the CFP, and we meant to say Arizona State, Arizona.
Yeah, ASU. the ones who actually did it.
Yeah.
But hey, man, the 12-team basketball playoff, which is probably going to become a 14-team playoff or a 16-team playoff before you know it, at least it gives you a path, right? Like, it's possible. It's a lot of work to be done. You kind of have to have that magical season. They're a long way away. Basketball's looking good right now. We'll see how they look when they face the elite teams in the Big 12, Houston, Iowa State. Iowa State just handled Kansas. I don't know if Kansas has been kind of a disappointment a little bit this year, but man, Houston and Iowa State look really good. We'll see if Arizona is on their level, off to a great start, of course, in the Big 12 at 5-0. Kind of a weird way that the season has evolved. If you look at like who you thought the best player on the team would be, and it was Caleb Love coming into the year, and he might be the third best player on the team, or maybe even the fourth best player on the team, which bodes well for maybe the overall outlook for the squad, right? The emergence of Henry Vassar, Jaden Bradley just continuing to be that steady, consistent guy, KJ Lewis showing signs now that he's going to become the all-around player that we thought he could be. So good. It was good scene over there at McHale Tuesday night. Khalil Tate was in the house.
The Desert Ghost.
At one point, they asked him to help throw the T-shirts into the crowd. You know, so I had visions, memories of Khalil chucking the ball just across the street over there at Arizona Stadium. He was throwing those T-shirts up into the crowd. Good form. He had very good form. Better form than anybody else. Yeah. He looked like he was in great shape. Got to say. Yeah.
Well, he's modeling now. He's like over here doing like Rydell ads where he's like dressed up as a football player. So you can walk into like Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever, and you could see Khalil Tate plastered on the wall wearing the gear. Acting too.
I cannot relate to that. Sorry.
By the way, do you know what Coeur means? Coeur? I looked this up the other day. Coeur is dog in Estonian. And Henry Vassar is playing like a dog. That guy, to me, that's the story of the year for Arizona basketball, in my opinion, is the rise of that guy.
Yeah, I just wrote a piece about it.
Yep.
I got an email from someone who said they weren't surprised or startled by his rise at all. But when you look at like the way his role was pretty minimal, you know, before Motiejus Krivas got hurt. I mean, he only played 3 minutes in back-to-back games in the Bahamas. 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And now he's like a dude who looks like he might be a first round pick if he continues on this ascent. So yeah, really big deal. I really like the way he plays too. Like he's very active and mobile and kind of feisty.
Yeah.
Too.
Like got that dog.
He's a factor. Yeah. He's a factor on both ends of the court. It's that's been a pleasant surprise and could be the difference maker for this team this year.
What do you do if he comes back next year and you have Mo Krivas? Do you do a Twin Tower lineup? Do you put Vassar on the floor?
I said at the end of the column that I don't think it's going to happen because Henry's playing himself into the NBA
Yeah,
right now. you know. But they, I mean, if both of them were here and both of them were healthy, they could definitely play together, because Henry really isn't a center. Like, he's playing center, but he's really more of like a stretch four kind of guy. And so you could have that high-low type of game that they have had in the past, like when they had Tubelis and Ballo, really had that going. You could play that type of game with those two guys if they were both here. My guess is that that won't happen the way things are trending right now.
I'm just glad he's playing up to kind of the expectations he had when he first got to Arizona, because when he first committed, I remember Jonathan Givony from ESPN / Draft Express was like,
I linked to that story. Yep.
Top European prospect coming to Arizona. And I'm like, you know, Lauri Markkanen didn't get this kind of pub when he came out from Finland. Could Arizona have the next Lauri Markkanen type of player? And the first couple of years, I know he was hurt last year because he fell out of a golf cart and broke his elbow. But like, I'm like, man, he kind of a disappointment, kind of underwhelming. And then Mo Crivas opened up the door for him unexpectedly, got hurt. And Henry Vasar has been playing out of his mind. And I think that has been a big reason why Arizona's undefeated in Big 12 play. But we'll see how the Wildcats look as they get ready to hit the road. Our guy Bruce Pasco will have all the coverage on Tucson.com in Lubbock and Stillwater. All right, Lev, before we get out of here, let's take one last look at the Big 12 Bonanza standings. I think you're the champ, right?
Yes, I am the champ. We picked games all the way through the until the last Big 12 team was eliminated from the field, right? That's how we decided to go about it. That was ASU, and it was very close. Like, the race was super close. We all had to kind of figure out, like, how are we going to strategize here? There was a lot of different ways that we could go with that game. You decided to go with Texas because you were trying to catch up, right? You had one more game to catch up to me. And then Brett was also, our former colleague, Brett Farrow, was in the same position. And he decided to go with his heart and took ASU. In that one, hoping that they would actually win and there'd be another game for them to play and another opportunity for him to catch up with us. And it didn't quite work out the way that you guys had hoped, because I took ASU and ASU ended up covering in that game. They did not win the game, but it was obviously awfully close down at the end, right? So looking at the final standings for the season against the spread, this is how close it was. I was 54-52-1, which is nothing to be proud of. Brett, 53-53-1, one game behind. And Justin, 52-54-1.
Jeez.
Two games behind, right? So I mean, we're kind of like the AL Central of pickers here, you know, like, you know, winning the division with like an 82-80 record kind of thing. But hey, I'm still proud of my accomplishment. Don't, you know, it's more than a participation trophy. Like, I put in a lot of work into just barely finishing above 500. If you want to look at the straight up records, Brett was the winner there. He was at 65-42. I was 63-44, and Justin bringing up the rear there as well at 60-47.
Wow.
So a lot of fun. I think we learned a lot about the Big 12 over the course of the season. There was definitely a learning curve. Like, if you look at our records compared to the previous year, they're way worse. Because we kind of knew the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And it was a feeling out process for the Big 12. And hopefully we'll do better next year. I doubt it, but, you know, you can always hope.
What was the biggest lesson that you learned? Mine was, I'm never riding with Oklahoma State. I was riding them for so long, and I'm like,
you almost on, got you it in that. They covered that Utah game on that Friday night. But man, I know we every week, right? There were certain teams we just keep going back to the well and back to the well and back to the well, and it like just never worked out. Oklahoma State, they're in a weird place. As an athletic program right now, like, they're struggling in men's basketball too.
Yeah.
And they were winless in football in the conference.
Yeah.
And there was that whole weird, like,
standoff.
Yeah. Great word for it with Mike Gundy, at the end of the year, like kind of demanding that he take a salary reduction. I mean, like the first losing season he's had, I think, I don't know, ever, or at least in forever. And they obviously did end up resolving it, but you know, maybe some bitterness there. They're 1-4 in men's hoops in the conference to start the season. So you sort of expect more from what's probably a pretty well-funded Oklahoma State athletic program.
Yeah.
I think they'll be good in baseball and softball, but you know, those aren't the headliners. Right. So.
But damn you, Mike Gundy, for costing me Big 12 bonanza this year. Glad he's back though. He can do his coach's show still at the old folks home out there in Stillwater. So that's always fun. But all right, well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast. We appreciate you guys for listening over the last hour. You can always check us out on Apple and Spotify. Subscribe, rate, comment, do your thing there, and also check us out on Tucson.com. You not only get the video version of this podcast, but you get all of our great work from my colleagues, Michael Lev, Bruce Pasco, PJ Brown, Elvia Verdugo, and myself. And also a huge shout out to Alexis Wikachea for driving the ship. We appreciate you guys for listening. Check us out on Tucson.com.